This is Yonder. Hi, everyone. Jeff Robbins here with episode 84 of the Yonder podcast, where we talk to company leaders and big thinkers about how to make remote work. We're focused on expanding the remote work job market and helping listeners to create happy, productive, distributed teams. This episode is a special one. We're recording this on Friday, March 13th, and hoping to publish it within the next 48 hours. If all goes well, maybe sooner. We've been talking about remote work on this podcast for nearly 4 years. This is episode 84. We've talked to 80 or more people on the podcast about remote work. However, things are starting to shift around remote work here in the United States, especially as the coronavirus starts to attack the Western Hemisphere, and people are being warned to stay home. Many, perhaps most companies in the U.S., kind of all over the world, are starting to look at remote work as a way of mitigating their financial losses. We, you know, need to keep the companies in business, despite the fact that people may be not going into the office for weeks. Months? We don't know yet. We're right at the beginning of this. And so everything's emerging, and remote work is kind of on the tip of everyone's tongues after doing this podcast for years. And, you know, being marginally, people sort of marginally interested, all of a sudden, all this stuff seems to be kind of coming into focus, which is exciting, a little scary, but exciting overall. As of today, thousands, if not millions, of office workers are finding themselves trying to settle in at home and get work done. They're trying to stay connected and be productive, despite the fact that they've got children, dogs, and probably piles of laundry all vying for their attention. We usually stay a little bit more strategic on this podcast and talk to company leaders about how they hire and manage remote workers. However, we want to get more tactical on this episode and really talk to the needs of the staff as well as management and executives. 10-7's Ivan Stegic joins me today to delve into this topic. Ivan's digital agency started as a co-located company 13 years ago, but 3 years ago, they transitioned to running as a fully distributed company. Between us, we have over 20 years of experience leading remote teams and leading companies in general. And I think I can speak for both of us in saying that it's simply a better way to work. But I want to hesitate from getting too preachy, hyping remote work on this episode. I want to really talk to people who are new to this, people who are kind of still adjusting, probably still kind of a little wary of the whole idea, and give some practical advice about how to be productive and stay connected while still working at home. All right, let's talk to Ivan.
Thanks for joining me today, Jeff.
Thanks for joining me today, Ivan. So this is a little confusing, right? So
right.
we're doing a cross posting episode. So this podcast will appear on the 10-7 website, your website, where you are up to, coincidentally, your 84th episode, and on the Yonder website, where we are also posting our 84th episode. So it is episode 84 for both of us, although of a different podcast. So we're kind of unclear on who should exactly start.
But that's okay. We can figure it out. And it was amusing to me to see the text message from you yesterday after I reached out about kind of recording a podcast episode that you were thinking exactly the same thing. I mean, that was good.
Yeah, I mean, but Yes. So to some extent, the impetus of this idea came from... So there's a company called the Bureau of Digital that runs conferences and a Slack channel, amongst other things, for people that run, in particular, digital agencies. They have some variants of that. But I was in Slack offering advice to all of these company leaders who were looking at possibly sending their people home. And people had a lot of questions and thoughts and stuff like that. And I think I started thinking, I'm good at disseminating information through a podcast. Maybe I should do a podcast. I don't want to do a podcast alone where I'm just talking. Yvonne's a great person who I enjoy talking to quite a bit. Maybe the two of us could do it. And then I looked at my messages, and there was a message from you saying, "Hey, do you want to be on a podcast to talk about all this?" And here we are.
It's just, I just love the way that it's worked out. The Bureau of Digital Community is just such a wonderful resource for us all, and it kind of feels like this wave of concern and wave of worry, and then action happened in the span of a few days after it. It seems to have been building up for the last few months. You know, what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to react? Is this really going to happen? And then all of a sudden, in the space of about 3 days, like, people are sending all of their employees home, and now leaders are wondering what's going to happen next.
Yeah, which still remains a question. I mean, it's not like everyone's just going to magically... rainbows and unicorns around remote work, right? This is it. We've both have struggled with remote work in various ways. I'd like to think that I've failed so that others can learn, and I'm happy to share all of my thoughts and insights from years of thinking about this. But it doesn't just happen, which is
right.
Why we're here.
Should we start with vocab? Kind of just kind of definitions,
yeah,
and words that we're going to be using maybe throughout the podcast, maybe that people will be using in their remote work, things that maybe haven't come up in the co-located office in the past. Maybe a good place to start is, are we all working from home? Are we remote? Are we distributed? Are we hybrid? Are we telecommuting? Are we telework? Like, what do we call it?
Yeah. Well, to some extent, this has evolved over the years. And if you listen to early episodes of the Yonder podcast, the first thing that I ask people, I ask them where they live, where I'm talking to them, where they are in the world, because we're spread out all over. But then I was asking them, what terms do you use? What are the words? What's the vocabulary that you use? And everyone kind of had different answers. Although over time, I feel like people have kind of gathered around this term remote work, which is a little bit difficult. It's because I have a whole philosophy around it. So remote has the same Latin roots as the word removed, right? Mm. This is the rem in remote. It means separated from. We are remote from something. I feel like for all of these workers who have been sent home because of the pandemic that's happening, they are remote, right? This is the company is there and they are home. However, there are a lot of companies that we talk to on the Yonder podcast. 10-7 is that type of company that does not have a central office. Those companies I tend to refer to as distributed, right? And I think that that's a better word because there's no mothership that people are not at, right? They're not somewhere. They're exactly where they need to be. They are distributed. They're spread out. We're distributed.
Peer to peer almost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're, you know, another word that gets used a lot is virtual. I'm hesitant to use the word virtual around companies or people, virtual workers or virtual companies. These are real workers They are real companies, right? Virtual, I think, tends to kind of come with this thought of sort of ephemeral and maybe sort of like, you know, a lot of like gig economy kinds of things where it's sort of like, oh, I work for Uber when I do, but then I don't, you know, I here and gone. But, you know, in order to kind of establish the sense of realness around this, which is important. We want to legitimize this type of working. I'm hesitant to use the word virtual. That being said, I think some of the communication is more virtual. These are kind of virtual connections that we're making. You know, we're sort of virtually meeting in person. We're not actually meeting in person. We're meeting over video. But, you know, so the word virtual does come up a fair amount. And then there are these other words that get thrown around a lot that I feel like are kind of antiquated. Telework is one that's coming up a lot. It just means working on, you know, telecommunicate over the telephone.
I always thought, I didn't like that either, because I always imagine a telephone, one of those big hunkin' beige ones which you have to hold to your face, you know?
Yeah. And one that's luckily fading out is e-work, which is just very loose and weird. I mean, it's like any work on a computer is electronic work, I guess, you know? And then work from home. Now, in the U.S., work from home is starting to lose this sort of stigma it had growing up in the 70s and 80s. There used to be these signs posted on, electrical poles and places as you drive around your town, work from home. And it was a pyramid scheme, you know, it was sort of like stuff dollars in envelopes and send them to your friends. You can work from home. You could make $50,000 a year, you know, and it was a sort of scam kind of thing. But what we're actually talking about literally these days is people working from home. They're working from home. I tend to be hesitant to use that word interchangeably with remote work because lots of times people are working from co-working spaces or Starbucks or, you know, so just other places other than, you know, they have an office. It's just not shared with other people. However, If we're quarantining at home, we're working from home. So that one's not inappropriate. Exactly.
Maybe it should be called quarantined work from now on.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, just associate it with sickness.
Very positive,
and virus.
Yes. What other words do we use in the community in this kind of distributed workforce?
Well, there's these terms that are kind of big words that come up a fair amount, but I just want to define them at the top because they're likely to come up as we talk about this stuff further. The idea of synchronous and asynchronous, which sound very technical, programmery kind of computer words, but they're not. And we talk about synchronous communication and asynchronous communication. Synchronous communication sometimes is referred to as real time, happening all at once, and asynchronous communication happening not in real time. Good examples of synchronous communication are recording a podcast over a VoIP kind of system or a telephone call or meeting in person, right? This is stuff where it needs to happen at the same time. It's funny because this language has actually made its way into our kind of work vernacular. We talk about syncing up, right? This is the sync and synchronous. Hey, let's sync up. Let's talk on the phone. Let's do a video conference. Let's even you can sync up over Slack or text messaging, but those are kind of hybrid technologies because you know it's kind of up to your company culture as to whether people need to respond immediately to a text or a Slack message or not, and those things, you know, tend to kind of live longer. Asynchronous communications like email, message boards, issue queues for you programmers out there. Even things like voicemail, you know, stuff that's kind of more archival that you can kind of go back and refer to.
And you can use Slack, you know, asynchronously as well. I mean, if you're going to
absolutely
spend some time focusing on some work and switching Slack off, you can put it into Do Not Disturb, and it effectively turns into asynchronous.
Right, and that stuff will oftentimes vary company by company, and it comes down to ultimately this idea of a communications policy, which I advise most companies to implement, certainly remote work companies, to, you know, what's expected? When do you use email? When do you text message someone? When do you message them in Slack? When do you call them? Do you just call them on the phone without any warning, or do you send them a message and say, hey, can we talk on the phone? Like, all of those kinds of things kind of come down to the ultimately sort of company culture, but I think that there should be more policy around that. Maybe expectations, you know, maybe it could be loose, but I think people need some guidance around that, just to know what's expected of them, because these can come in conflict. If you say to people, for instance, oh, we've got flex time at our company, you know, you need to be at meetings, but other than that, whenever you get your work done is fine. And you have a policy that if you get a Slack message, you need to respond to it within 5 minutes. Those things are exactly clashing with one another, right? You know, the you can't go pick the kids up at school and try to be, you know, text messaging, Slack messaging, you know. And man, I've done it. I remember distinctly sitting in line to pick up my son at school and responding to Slack messages on my phone. But you know, let's just, it's better to be a little bit more thoughtful.
Yeah, a little more planful, intentional.
Intentional, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are some misconceptions about working from home, and I use air quotes there, but you can't see them. I know that in a previous job...
Air quotes around working from home, or air quotes around misconceptions?
Oh, no, working from home, definitely.
Okay.
I remember in a previous job when people said they were working from home, there are those air quotes again, on Fridays or on Monday mornings, usually that meant they were either planning a long weekend or experienced a long weekend.
Right. They say, I'm going to be working from home on Friday, and they're miming a golf club swing.
Right.
It's like, uh-huh.
Yeah. So
yeah, you're not doing anybody any favors here.
I think that's changed, and at least the connotations have for me. I definitely trust all the people that I work with. When people say they're working, they are generally working, from what I can tell. There are other misconceptions around distributed work and working from home. Do you want to speak to some of those?
Yes. I think that, you know, to try to not get too into the weeds on this, I think that it's an issue of trust. Mm-hmm. On the Yonder podcast, the word trust comes up a lot. I think that managers who are used to managing people by looking at them, by, you know, when we think of sort of the... turn of the 20th century style factory space, right? The managers have this elevated office that's elevated above the factory floor so that they can look down and see that people are working. That doesn't really work in the electronic age, because just because someone's sitting behind a computer doesn't mean that they're not on Facebook or not really working, you know. We need to, you know, but it still has that sort of primal kind of trust building thing, like I can see them, so therefore I can trust them. And I think for a lot of those managers, there's this feeling that if you can't see people, that they won't be trustworthy, right? That they won't act in a trustworthy way. It has been my experience that if you start to trust people and allow them a certain amount of autonomy, most of them will rise to the occasion. I think another very important part of managing is to provide really clear expectations so that people know what a good job looks like and they can actually, you know, they're clear on what they need to do. Because, you know, it can be really difficult being an employee. I mean, we try to find some, you know, empathy for these workers who might be slacking off. They might just not know what to do. You know, they might be unclear.
They might not have direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so to provide some direction, and then, you know, feedback and not monitoring exactly. You know, one of the things I say is that it's basically impossible to micromanage as a manager of remote workers, which is really great if you're a remote worker. You know, we need to allow people to kind of, like I said, sort of rise to the occasion. You know, there needs to be feedback mechanisms. We need to check in daily, weekly, whatever, to kind of just check to see how people are doing. And oftentimes, a lot of the newer tools around what work means, you know, things like if, you know, both of us have run digital agencies that do development, mm-hmm. computer programming, web development in particular. But around those tools, there, you know, you can see when someone has checked in their work and what they've done and stuff like that. There are these sort of feedback mechanisms. I don't know quite how those mechanisms work at all companies, if in different environments. There are all sorts of metrics kinds of tools that have been built from everything from telecommunications companies, you know, customer support companies and stuff like that. There are tools out there to help us manage more based on results rather than whether butts are in seats.
Yeah.
And those are better. It's a better way to go, right? To you know, let people work, give them autonomy. You won't know for 4 days, 3 days, a week, maybe, whether anyone's working. But when you get to that cycle where you can check in on those metrics, you'll have some idea. And then you also need to kind of create a culture where you can have frank conversations with people. Maybe you do daily, especially for companies that are new to this, do daily phone calls. They don't need to be that long, but it's just like, how's it going? How are you adjusting to this remote work thing? What's going well for you? What's difficult? Is there anything I can help with? You know, like to talk holistically about what's working, but also what doesn't work. And some companies don't have a company culture that supports that.
I think that Gary Cole's character in Office Space, what was his name? Bill Lumberg. I think his mind would explode not being able to micromanage people. And I think the thought of trusting other adults to do the work that they should be doing would just blow his mind. I don't think he could exist.
Well, the key word there is adult. You know, running my company, Lullabot, I had multiple people come in and say, oh, wow, this is the first job that I've ever had where I felt like I was treated like an adult. You know, where I was trusted, where I was given autonomy, where I could do some self-managing, and where I was allowed to be vulnerable, right? To talk about what's not working. There's this sort of alpha culture kind of thing, a lot of sort of a stereotypical startup culture, but this exists at lots of companies where people are expected to only share their triumphs, their wins, and it's kind of a winning culture. Tends to be sort of a gender male kind of vibe kind of thing, which can be difficult in its own way. What happens managing at any company, especially, you know, co-located company, is that managers become really well attuned to looking for those micro expressions, those difficult, you know, when are people not really saying what's really going on? When are they having difficulty? When, you know, what is their difficult, in order to not to attack them, but to help them to, you know, oh, okay, maybe we need to, do you need some help with this? Oh, I guess I do. Yeah, actually, now that you mention it. But in a remote work environment, that stuff can get hidden quickly. I do think that managers should still ask, but we also need to create a culture and precedence, right? This needs to be, you can talk about it, but until other people at the company see other people doing it and it actually working out, where they say, you know, I was just completely unproductive yesterday. I had all these tasks I wanted to get done, but my kid is sick and my other kids are home and I'm just having a really hard time with this remote work thing. And to have the manager not go like, well, you're fired, you know, like to have it be like, okay, well, what can we do? Do you want to try and work evenings? Do you want to try, like, we're all right. in this
there
together.
Are options.
Remember that we're all in this together, you know? And you know, and it's about collaboration and support, but it's also about learning, and employee development, you know, I mean, this is about, people being not, you know, not to get the help that they need because they're always going to need help. There may be some of those people, but for the most part, people will get the help they need. They learn, and then they don't need that help anymore, and they can help other people. And so, you know, I think that this idea of vulnerability is actually has come up a lot on the Yonder podcast as a key to remote work.
Now, there are going to be millions of people who are at home trying to do the remote work thing. And I thought it might be a good idea to go through some kind of high-level tips of what these new workers from home should consider doing, should consider putting into their regular you know, course of actions that they're going through. And I know that you have an article out, 6 Tips for Productively Working from Home, that we could...
Yes, it might be seven tips okay. by the time it gets posted. But it will be on the Yonder website. We'll link to
Absolutely.
It in the show notes.
But let's give these new workers some high-level tips here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first one that comes up a lot is very tactical. It's to work like a worker, right? Like, you know, get people to get dressed, you know, have a space for your work. Make both some physical space, but also some mental space. And that could just be as simple as, like, when I've got my headphones on, I'm working, and don't anybody in the house bother me,
yeah.
you know, or when I'm sitting at this desk, or when I've got the door closed, or, and it goes both ways, right? There's a message you're sending to the people that you live with, but it's also a message that you're sending to yourself. This is my work chair. If I want to not work, I'm going to get out of this chair and go somewhere, and then I'm not working. And you can think to yourself, I haven't sat in my chair enough today.
Yeah.
Or, you know, right? Like, it feels like I'm not working because I'm not in my chair. Whatever those things are, those sort of devices that you use to kind of know when you're working and when you're not working. Because here's one of my sayings. Working from home is living at work, right? We all think, oh, working from home is so great, but it's also living at work. And so you need to kind of create some definition between working and not.
You know, that was one of the things we very quickly learned in the first few weeks of being distributed. And as you mentioned, we were co-located for the longest time, 10 years, and then 3 years ago we became distributed, and we kind of had to test it out and try it out. We all started working from home on, you know, for one day a week. And it is so important to have an actual space you can work in. And it's not just about everything you just described, which is very important, but it's also being able to leave that place of work to enjoy the rest of the house and enjoy the rest of the life outside of work. And that act of standing up and walking away from that office chair you just described and the table that you usually work at is also liberating. It gives you the ability to now, you know, process the fact that you are now spending time with your family, walking down this, yeah,
take a break. Catch your breath. Yeah, I mean, you know, work is another word for work is effort, right? This is, we are endeavoring at work. It's not easy, right? They wouldn't call it work if it was easy. And so you need to take a break every now and then. And there are different ways to do that. But if you're kind of confusing what a break is, you know, I sit on my couch to work and I sit on my couch to take a break. It can be difficult to feel like you can kind of step away. And, you know, you might have multiple places that you work. It might be that I get up in the morning and before I even take a shower or anything, I'll go sit on the couch and work for like 2 hours, just catch up on all my communication. And then I take a shower and then I go into my office and I work there for another couple hours. And then I go to the gym and then I work at Starbucks in the afternoon. You know, like, it's, lots of times people are kind of changing it up some. They have sort of multiple places. You know, there are any number of ways. I think it's important for people to kind of experiment some. And ultimately, this is about kind of finding productivity. Find your points of productivity. What works for you? What are your sort of internal productivity rhythms? And to work with those. I mean, especially if your company is amenable to working relatively flexibly. It's hard not to work flexibly when you're working from home, just because, you know, things that in office, if you go sit in the lunchroom at the office, you still are at the office, right? Whereas if you go sit in your kitchen for lunch at home, you're at home. And so it feels like I can't build. I'm not working now. Like, whereas if you're in the lunch room in the office, like this is part of my work day. And so, you know, and then I joked in the intro for the Yonder podcast, that, you know, they get things from kids and dogs.
Piles
and
of laundry
building up. Yeah. Exactly. That's just sitting there and it's like, I'm not being productive right now. I'm going to do laundry. That's okay. Maybe that's your break, you know? But you also need to kind of find that harmonic rhythm, of work so that you know that you can be productive. The other thing is, I just need to say this. This is not particularly helpful to those managers who are listening. So maybe those managers could go have a little snack right now, and I'll just speak to the workers. You're not usually very productive during the day at your office anyways. Let's be honest. Between the going, you know, the lunch break and the stopping by people's offices and connecting and, you know, all these things that kind of amount to connecting and culture and talking about how things are and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like, my experience working at an office was that if I got 4 hours of productivity a day, like, that was good. That was a really good day. And so, you know, I just want to encourage everyone. Okay, managers, you can go back. I want to encourage everyone to cut themselves some slack here. Like we need. It's more about getting the work done, and less about exactly the number of hours that it took. You know, we want to try to get more results oriented if we can, and not quite get so caught up, but you know, but for everyone to acknowledge a certain amount of humanity, and all of that, you know, that kind of comes with that vulnerability.
Now, there are some other tips that are in your article, and one of them is a word you made up, I think, over-communicate.
I Googled it. I think it's a word, but my spell checker just doesn't know it. So the title of that section is over communicate, which I figure three times is enough communication, but all of them have little squiggly lines underneath them. Cause this Google Docs is saying, what is this? Communicate too much. There is no such thing as over communication in a remote environment. There are entire books that have been written to limit communication in a typical office space, right? To you know, we don't CC people that don't need to respond. Only people who we're going to expect a response from this email should get this, because we want to, you know, limit people's inboxes, and we want to minimize meeting time, and we want to, you know, all of this kind of stuff. But in a remote environment, this is how you know that people are around you. This is how you know that people are working, both as a manager and as staff, that you know what, you know, that your manager is seeing what you're doing. This is how we connect. A lot of these books talk about you need to send out an agenda for the meeting before the meeting. And then when everyone gets to the meeting exactly on the minute that the meeting starts. In fact, maybe you should not start the meeting at 2:00. You should start the meeting at 2:07 so that people will know how serious you are about the exact time that the meeting is starting. And then exactly at 2:07, you start that agenda, and hopefully you're done by 2:12, right? You know, like get it over with. That doesn't really work in a remote environment. First of all, people will be there on time because they don't get distracted getting to the video conference. There may be technical problems that you'll need to overcome in your first few weeks. But as people kind of get the headphones working and kind of figure out which buttons to press to get Zoom up and running or get into the conference line or whatever it is. Talking about the weather, talking about the virus, all the stuff that is the human stuff is actually really good because we need some non-purposeful communication in our lives just as humans. We just need to, in order to connect and to trust each other and feel like we're being heard, we need to be able to do that. And pretty much all communication in a remote work environment is purposeful, which is kind of a good thing, right? There's not a lot of peripheral stuff that's unintentional that's kind of coming in to confuse you and distract you and all that kind of stuff. But if we're not also sort of intentional about non-purposeful kind of things, you know, just kind of checking in, how's everybody doing? Is everybody okay? Good. You know, like, then we start to lose that connection. So build that in. Start the meeting at 2:00, and then maybe at 2:07 you can kind of start to get around to the agenda, and that kind of thing. But there is, you know, there are a whole lot of communications methods these days. Slack is one that is very, very popular with remote companies and oftentimes has been tried in co-located companies. If you work at a co-located company, perhaps there's somebody tried to set up Slack at some point because they heard how great it was, but it just didn't catch on. It's because that type of communication, this sort of transparent public/private kind of thing where two people can have a conversation in a room and other people can kind of see what's happening, but aren't obligated to jump in. So it's, you know, it's private in that it's a private room only to be seen by the people who are in that room, but public because everyone in that room can see it, but it's still a conversation that's just happening between two or maybe three people. And you could pull somebody else in, you know, sign them at Yvonne. Hey, what do you think about this? Can I get your comment? It's kind of not needed in a lot of office environments, particularly if you've got like that sort of typical office, open office space where that stuff is sort of happening anyways, sometimes to the annoyance of other people in the office, you know, it's not needed, but it's a good thing for remote work because you can get a lot of that peripheral communication. That's the over communication. And I should say, you know, one of my sayings around remote work, at least from my perspective, is that people should CC liberally, which I know is exactly the opposite of how a lot of companies encourage their people to use email. But my philosophy is that if you are in the CC line, you are not expected to reply to this email. It's just peripheral information. It's just, we're keeping you in the loop.
It's interesting that you talk about email because I found that since being a distributed company, we've relied internally much less on email. All of our communications happens either in Slack in real time, over Zoom for video, or in an issue queue or in a wiki or somewhere where we're actually documenting things. And the only email that I think I'm the only person who uses email in the whole company, and it's usually to talk to clients and to talk to new business prospects. It's external. Even our clients are using Slack and the tools we use. So it's I'm sure there are different modalities and different companies, but it's just interesting that, you know, it didn't even occur to me that email was something that you would use internally.
Well, email is a very low common denominator, right? Like the telephone, kind of everybody who's in business is expected to have an email address, right? Especially for people who are new to this whole remote working thing. You don't need to bite off too much stuff at once, right? You can just use the same tools, the telephone and email that you've been using, and you can use with virtually anybody on the planet. Well, the phone probably more so than email, but still, you know, like you could do all the work with just those things, you know, conference calls, telephone. I'm a big believer in telephone conference calls. I think a lot of people think these days that remote work is going to be all about video. I like the phone. I find that I worried less about the expression I'm making, or what I can be more thoughtful and pick my nose, or what, you know, like I don't need to kind of worry about where I'm sitting and how people can see me and stuff like that. I can really focus on the conversation itself, and also I can do it from wherever, right? I can, if I need to hop in the car, I can put on my Bluetooth headset and do that, or, you know, whatever.
That's one of your tips too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think another misconception around remote work is that it will be all email, is that it will be all, here's the word, asynchronous communication, right? That we won't have conversations with each other. We will just send each other these paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of email, and then we'll be all, you know, obligated to absorb. Oh, what am I being asked to do? Oh my gosh, I don't think I understand it all. Oh, now I've got to write paragraphs of email. Did you mean this? But, you know, it's like, for particularly things like that, right, requests, what I call strategic communication, where we're doing the planning work, as opposed to tactical communication, mm-hmm. which is the work, right? for the strategic stuff, synchronous communication works way better. Brainstorming, again, that word syncing up, you know, like, hey, let's just sync up on this. I want to let you know what I'm thinking around it, and what's kind of expected and what the client's looking for, so that you can go heads down and do your tactical work. For, you know, when things get confusing like that, if you're finding that an email is longer than three paragraphs and you're really just sending that email to one person, like, pick up the phone. I do recommend scheduling phone calls, even if it's just to say in Slack or even just a text message like, hey, could you talk at the top of the hour? Maybe it's, you know, it's only 10 minutes from now, but could you talk at the top of the hour? To give people a chance to, you know, you're kind of respecting their space, their privacy. You know, when a company has people working at home, you know, we're in their home and you don't know if people are eating lunch or whatever. And if you do a FaceTime call with them and, you know, they're on the toilet, you know, it's like, what do I do? My boss is FaceTiming me. Like, I feel like I need to answer, but you know, like don't put people through that.
Right.
You know, don't just respect that, you know. And the other thing is the issue of context shifting, which managers will know, but staff may not, you know, workers may not be as familiar with that concept. But if you're working heads down and someone calls you to shift you from thinking in a very tactical, problem-solving kind of way to more of a zoomed-out, wide, you know, do you think that this is the right way to go? It's actually really hard to switch your mind from one of those to the other, you know. I mean, the phone call will always take precedence, so you can switch into that mode pretty quickly. But when you hang up the phone, to switch back to writing that thing or coding that thing or whatever that is that you're doing, is difficult. So it's nice, oftentimes, you know, if I'm in the middle of, I don't know, composing an email or something, and somebody texts and says, hey, can we talk at the top of the hour? And I say, I think this thing I'm working on is going to take me a little bit longer. Let's talk at quarter past the hour. And of course, I'm I'm talking about, quote unquote, the hour here, because I'm used to remote companies working across mm-hmm. time zones. And that's a way of talking about time that's not
specific.
That's more relative than, and that won't be so much of an issue for people who are in the same city, just all working from home. But it's a way that we remote people talk about these kinds of things, or we add the time zone onto everything we do. Hey, can you talk at noon Eastern today? Because in a remote company where people are spread out across time zones, noon
exactly.
means nothing.
Exactly.
There are 24 yes, noons a day.
I love the idea of picking up the phone. And then we actually do that at 10-7. We have a little rule, like if there is a back and forth of more than half a dozen interactions in Slack, then maybe it's time to go to the Zoom. Like if you are trying to hash out a problem in Slack and you're just not getting your idea across or it's just not working out, maybe that means there's a time for a modality change. And so, like, the rule is half a dozen, go to Zoom.
Yeah, I'd say half a dozen's a lot.
Five or six back and forth? Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
flex time. We mentioned that earlier. There's something about working remotely where if you embrace flex time, that's another tip I think that we should talk about, because it really lets you time shift your day. It makes your life a whole lot easier with your family. You can pick kids up if you need to. What other thoughts do you have around that?
This is going to be difficult for a lot of managers who are new to this, who are managing a remote team for the first time. This idea that people might not be working at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is really freaky. And maybe you need to ease into this. Part of the thing is I write this up in my article. Like, I feel like no one is really professional. We pretend to be professional, and we can pull it off for about 8 hours a day. But part of it is knowing that when those 8 hours are over, we can go home, we can put on sweatpants. That's probably just an American thing, but it's a thing we do, so I'm just going to say we can put on sweatpants, and we can collapse on the couch in a wholly unergonomic manner. And we know that we've got that. And so you can kind of pull off 8 hours. When you're working at home, there's a lot of distractions. There's a lot of things that are happening. And it's even this comes down to this kind of respect thing. I just mentioned this earlier, but as companies, we are invading people's homes. Like, we're being invited into their homes. So let's be respectful and let's allow them to kind of define, self-manage, and kind of define when and how they're the most productive, and allow them to kind of be a little bit more human. I think we can be both human and professional. If people need to kind of flex their time, they do. As long as, you know, if you've got meetings that people need to be at, they need to be at those meetings. If they've got deadlines, they need to meet those deadlines, certainly. But beyond that, if people are going to be more productive at working after the kids have gone to bed or early in the morning or whatever, like, that's okay. That being said, I do want to alert people who are new to this that there is a problem. I'm a little bit hesitant to call this a problem. People who are working from home remotely, remote workers, usually will err on the side of overworking rather than underworking, just to show that they're working. To kind of prove that they're working, they will work too much, oftentimes way too much. And so the irony is, of course, that managers who are new to remote work are afraid that people aren't going to work enough. It's been my experience, and nearly universal on doing over 80 episodes of the Yonder podcast, that remote workers tend to work too much. As a manager, then the problem becomes worrying about burnout and resentment, you know, and all these other things that are like, you know, so by offering time to be a little bit more flexible, we can kind of allow for that, because people will work if you require them to work the 9 to 5, they will work the 9 to 5, but they'll also check their email at 6 o'clock before dinner, and then they'll check their email at 8 o'clock and probably work maybe from 8 to 9:30 because it was an email that came in, and it's not really work. I'm more just communicating, you know, and these 8 hour days quickly become 10, 11, 12-hour days. So
that kind of segues nicely into one of the other tips you have, which is seek purpose, and the necessary, like, you basically have to self-manage when you're at home, right? And maybe that's not something you're used to when you're in the office. And you're not going to see your team members. You're not going to see all the people that you work with all the time. So trying to figure out where you fit in into that company might be a little harder.
Yeah, purpose is context, right? This is about understanding where we fit in. And when we're sitting at home, we don't feel like we're fitting in anywhere. So to be able to visualize, how does this work that I'm doing, what is the purpose of this work? What is my purpose in my role at the company? What is my purpose? What is the my team's purpose, the department that I'm working on? What is our purpose? What is the company's purpose, right? And lots of companies have core values and mission statements and ongoing vision kinds of things. But that also needs to, you know, and that can provide some guidance, but that also sort of needs to filter down. So as a worker, I think, you know, taking the initiative to ask kind of what is my purpose. Now, here's the forewarning. Some managers may take offense at this, but I think that there are ways of doing it that are, if we remember that we're all a team, we're all headed in the same direction, you know, but to ask, hey, listen, I've got this thing. You've asked me to do this task. When's it due? When do you need it? How soon do you need it? Okay. Here's how long I think it's going to take me, but you know, and giving that kind of feedback. Who else is working on this? What is the, if you're a company that services company, what is the client need here? Or if you're a product company, like how does this fit into the product development, you know, and to just understand all that peripheral stuff around what you're doing, I think starts to create this sort of warm embrace and purpose, right? That people need purpose. They need to feel important, and they need to kind of know that the work that they're doing matters. And so in a company, some of that comes through this primal kind of stuff. Just because you're surrounded by people, it feels a sense of purpose. I'm working with these people and they seem nice, so that's good. That's good enough, you know. In lieu of that, you know, trying to seek out your purpose. Hopefully, you know, managers will do a good job of helping people to understand what their expectations are and what the purpose is and sort of how things fit in. But if your manager's not doing that, ask, at least as best you can.
Part of, I think, a leader's job is to trust their workers, their team members. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's part of
it. Is it, though? I would say, you know, stereotypically, the idea of the untrustful manager is more, you know, is going to be the way that the sitcom is set up and not this loving, caring, empathetic,
I think if you're a leader manager and you don't have trust in your employers, you're going to be doomed, especially in a remote work environment. Like that's you are, it's not that you're...
I agree with you. It is the kiss of death in a remote environment.
So
yes.
So I think what I was trying to say was that's, I think, a big part of being a leader. And I think on the other side of the equation, where you have team members, they also have to trust your leader. But I think a bigger part of it might be being vulnerable as well. I don't, like, if you're a team member and you're at home and you're going to experience some sort of isolation, because that's one of the things you deal with in a remote environment, you're isolated. I think you have to be vulnerable enough to say, oh, holy crap, I feel isolated. Who can I talk to about this? Can I talk to my team member? Can I talk to my manager? Like, I think that's another tip that's on your list is be vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you would like that either your company culture or your department culture, your team culture will allow for that vulnerability. I mean, I think that there's a lot of companies, you know, have this more alpha culture, you know, where we only share our wins and don't share any of the difficulties that we have. But it's really important that we holistically are able to share with our managers and our coworkers what we're doing, right? This is the over-communicate part, right? There's a little bit of overshare as well, right? You know, of like, you know, my kid's sick, my dog is barking, I need to go walk my dog, I need to, you know, whatever those things are. But also like, I'm struggling here. I'm confused. I'm lonely, you know, and hopefully your manager will be empathetic enough to say, yeah, I could see why you would be lonely. You've never worked remotely before. You know what? Tomorrow, let's just set up a lunch call for everybody on the team. Everybody who wants to join, it's just going to get on video. And we're all going to eat our lunch together and, I don't know, talk about whatever the latest HBO show that people are talking about.
Or coronavirus. Or we'll talk about the virus. Yeah. How many people do you know that have it?
It seems to be the topic of conversation. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, that's not very settling, but okay, sure. You know, I mean, we'll talk about whatever we talk about to connect because we want to connect. That is really important. And the truth is that remote work, by default, is disconnecting. The advantage is that we have the opportunity to purposefully reconnect and define how that connecting is going to happen, right? I think that the autonomy is just, it's part of remote work, right? Remote workers are going to be autonomous. They're working on their own. They're working, separated from everybody else. So as managers, we need to embrace that. As workers, we need to embrace that. Like, there's just a certain amount of autonomy. However, I think a lot of time that autonomy or the trade-off kind of feeling is that, well, since I have this autonomy, I can't expect to also remain connected. You know, I'm going to be isolated because I'm autonomous. And that doesn't need to happen, right? I think that we should connect, but we need to be intentional about connecting. As I'm saying, like, let's start the meeting a little early so we can talk about the weather, you know, whatever those things are. But we lose some of that nonverbal communication that happens in an office space. You know, the manager can't walk by your cubicle and give you a high five. Flap. You know, hey, Bob, great work.
Or
flap.
Or a high five elbow, right? Come on, we got to be.
Yeah, well, there's many reasons that we should not be high-fiving right now. But what it means is we need to be intentional. Mm-hmm. Instead of the high five, I need to send an email. And I need to say, hey, Bob, I want you to know I really appreciate how you got this thing done on time, under budget. It's great. I'm really proud of you. I'm great to have you as a coworker. You're a really nice person to work with. That's a much better message than a high five. It's more work. It's certainly more intentional, but it's all over like more meaningful. It is better. And so, you know, I get to use all of my sayings on this podcast. Another thing that I say is that remote work is ankle weights for management. It's ankle weights for communication. It's more difficult, but you are building better muscles, and ultimately, in the long run, it's going to be better, right? It's more difficult at first, but once you get used to it, it's a better practice. It's a better workout. I'm trying to figure out how to make the ankle weights metaphor go further than it actually is. But anyways, it's difficult at first. You need to be very intentional about it, and it's going to feel like a lot of work. But once you kind of get the rhythm of it, part of the side effect of all this email and Slack and all this kind of stuff is you're documenting all this stuff. And if you need to bring new people into the loop, you just CC them on the email or forward the email to them or invite them into the Slack channel or point them, you know, like it's all there. Whereas lots of times in an office, you know, it's like, oh, well, you haven't been to the meetings that we've been having for the past 3 weeks in the conference room. Sorry. Maybe I can have somebody send you the notes. You know, it's just not quite the same thing as being able to kind of syndicate all of that information so quickly because it's already kind of stored electronically.
We've talked a great deal about what new workers can expect. We've gone through the vernacular. I would love to hear if you have any high-level advice for company leaders, either owners of agencies that have always been co-located somewhere or leaders of groups in larger companies that now have to manage 10, 20, 50 people. What are the nuggets of wisdom for them?
Give me a call.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to share this information. I could share small doses of it for free and large doses of it I'm happy to do some consulting.
Everyone's not the same, right? We can't give the same advice, but
it's difficult because it really has to do with what kind of a company culture you're starting with, what you know, how your company communicates, what your company values, like what how value happens at the company, and then I guess also the company values, like the core values as well, like you know, what are those things, what, you know, because there are a lot of companies, a thing I say is, you know, don't confuse foosball with culture. Right. Just because you've got a beer fridge at your company does not mean that that's your company culture. Your company culture may be we drink, we value drinking. We like, or it could be that we value creating things together. But the beer fridge is not culture. And so to some extent, by not having those artifacts, it doesn't mean that you don't have culture, but you just need to kind of rethink what is culture, how you communicate, what you value, what you care about. And then start mirroring that, you know, if foosball means, hey, we take things lightly and we have fun, and if anybody wants to take a break at any time, there are lots of ways of doing that in a remote environment as well. It may be scary to jump right into that if you also need to establish the fact that you can get work done. But eventually, you know, if you were to take this on as a more long-term kind of thing, there are ways of doing that as well. And I could talk and have talked for hours and hours and hours about this subject. So like I said, if anybody's got questions, just send me an email or give me a call. Jeff@yonder.io is where you can track me down in the yonder sense. I also do business coaching. Most of that happens at jjeff.com. JJEFF.com is where you can find me for that kind of stuff. But yeah.
It's been so great doing this with you today, Jeff. I feel like I'm going to close it for 10-7 and close it for yonder. It just, very confusing how I'm going to end this right now. But it's just, I feel like you have to say something as well. And
see, your podcast has an outro.
Yes,
you have a little like thing you say at the end. Whereas mine, I just say goodbye to the guests and then we play a little music and off we go. So goodbye, Yvonne. It was lovely talking to you.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It was lovely talking to you as well. You've been listening to a special episode of the 10-7 podcast and of the Yonder podcast. You can find us both online. We're at 107.com/podcast and Yonder is at yonder.io. If you have a second, send us a message. We love hearing from you. Our email address is podcast@107.com. And if you need Jeff, just go to yonder.io and fill out the contact form. Until next time, stay healthy, don't touch anything, and sing a song while you wash your hands. This is Yvonne Stegich and Jeff Robbins. Thank you for listening.